But according to this propaganda scheme, the soil has nothing to do with your health. Furthermore, they go on to say that a carrot is a carrot the world over. And whether it's raised on organic soil or chemically treated soil or the poorest of soil, you cannot change the quality. All you can do is to change the quantity. Now, if there is any bigger lie in the world than that one that is promulgated by any organization, I'd like to know what it is. Another thing they say is there is no evidence to indicate that a well-nourished person is any more resistant to disease than a poorly nourished person. In fact, they say, make it emphatic, that disease is caused by the amount of germs there are, and you have nothing whatsoever to do with the protecting yourself against the germ. You're nothing but a tumbleweed waiting for a bunch of germs to pounce on you, and nothing you can do about it. They say that there's only 8 diseases that are due to deficiencies of food, and those 8 diseases are very rare in the United States. They're, of course, pellagra, scurvy, beriberi, rickets, goiter, eye trouble, and lack of riboflavin in the body. Now, they claim that they are very rare in the United States, and since they are rare, then there is no problem about our food. And the thing that they emphasize more than anything else is that we're the best-fed nation on the face of the earth, we're the healthiest nation, we've got the finest food, and that our processors do a better job than any place else in the world at giving us most perfect food. So don't believe any of these food faddists. And the biggest thing they say is that all of you people, by your very presence here, indicate that you're not in your right mind and you ought to be put away because you're a faddist and you don't belong in civilized community. In fact, that's what he comes out there point blank and says. The poor, deluded people who think when they eat a natural food that it's going to do anything more for them than the good food they buy in a supermarket, it's just too bad. Now, that's the kind of propaganda that is being put out by this. The foremost maxim of the ancient Greeks was, know thyself. Any animal, bird, bee, or insect knows more about protecting and preserving its own life processes than brilliant, egotistical man. Our scientists and doctors know the names, purposes, and workings of every bone, nerve, vein, gland, and organ of our body, yet they must die of the same diseases and about the same average age as the layman they serve. Man has explored every corner of the earth, developed its resources, harnessed the air for transportation of self and thoughts, made electricity his servant and chemistry his tool. He has split the atom and now stands ready to conquer outer space. But he has entirely neglected one fundamental principle of true science. Our creed, all truth is safe and nothing else is safe. And he who withholds the truth from man for motives of profit or expediency is either a coward or a criminal or both. You know, I lecture to a great many doctors of all faiths. And I usually start out by telling them that I'm not going to give them anything that they don't know about the human body. I don't know the vast name of the bones or the nerves or the arteries or the veins or the muscles or any of those things. But I do know one thing that 99 9/10% of them don't know, and that is how to maintain myself in health day after day, year in and year out, without a doctor's help. That is something they can't do themselves. They have the same diseases and die at about the same ages and about the same percentage that the people they serve. The amazing thing is how the American people have so much confidence in doctors whose health, in many cases, are worse than their own. Although you may not yet realize it, your greatest problem is your health. True science and true health as we see it for the individual is based on 3 fundamental truths, namely, spiritually, we are the sum total of our innermost and repeated faiths and beliefs. Mentally, we are the sum total of our innermost and repeated thoughts and spoken or written words. If that is true, and it is definitely accepted, and has been proven by thousands of times, then why is it so hard for people to believe that physically we are the sum total of the material that makes up our body? If it holds good for the mental and spiritual, why doesn't it hold good for the physical? If then you believe in God, you must believe that He can and will furnish you with all the necessary building materials to keep you in vibrant, buoyant health from the cradle to a ripe old age. No one who believes in God or in nature as God's manifestation can possibly believe that He intended us to be victims of every lurking germ with no means of self-protection. One basic principle of Christianity is that man is master of his own destiny. Whether white or black, master or servant, he and he alone controls his own future. He is not a tumbleweed to be blown hither and yon by each varying gust of wind. You realize, of course, that your health, that without health there is little happiness. You believe that a well-nourished body is a healthy one. You buy the best food available for your family. You're an excellent cook. You serve your family well-balanced meals. And that's the way the ideal mother there is with the child figures. Yet too frequently you have that tired, depressed feeling. Those periods of vibrant, buoyant health, vitality, seem to become ever shorter and less frequent. It is assumed that as a nation we are healthier than we have ever been because the average lifespan has increased. But as against this, you read, the grand total of registered chronic illness in the United States is 95 million. That a checkup of 500 apparently healthy businessmen, average age of 48 years, revealed that 41% of them suffered from physical disease of which they were not aware, and 11% were aware of some physical illness, or a total of 52% who needed immediate treatment. In 1,000 people, only 13% were entirely free of defects. That would mean that 87% of them are suffering some sort of deficiency. Now the question is, you're confused? No one could blame you if you were. In school, you were taught there are 6 basic factors that contribute to health. You have conformed with all health rules and have been careful to see that your family got all 6: sunshine, fresh air, pure water, exercise, sufficient sleep, and wholesome food. What's wrong with this meal? Well, it consists of ham, wax beans, mashed potatoes, cauliflower, pineapple salad, white bread, butter, jelly, mustard, coffee, cream, sugar, cake with chocolate icing. What's wrong with it? Everything's wrong with it. There's only 2 things on there fit to eat, and they've probably been boiled until there's nothing. Potatoes are surely boiled out. And so the only things on there that's any good is probably the cauliflower and the wax beans, and they have been pretty well dilapidated. Everything else is wrong. And yet that's a typical American meal. There's no vitamin C in it. There's very little of anything in its nutritive value. The ham has been embalmed until it's not only dead, but it's deader than the dead, embalmed with a needle of embalming fluid. White sugar and white bread, white cake, everything is wrong with it. And yet it's typical. Then the answer must be in the one word, wholesome. My parents were raised in West Virginia, and they had raised all their own grain. They took it down to the mill and ground it, and took it home and built and cooked it fresh. They raised their own sugar cane, raised their own molasses. They had their own maple syrup. They raised all their own foods on the farm, bought practically nothing. First 3 children had 16 teeth above and 16 below, and had all the characteristics of parents. Then they moved into the city, and how much nicer it was not to go and make your own bread, take it down to the mill and have to grind it, and have this nice, beautiful white flour that you could make so much more fluffy and nicer, and have beautiful cakes of all kinds, and sugar that wasn't sticky, and you didn't have to go out and gather wood and boil down this molasses and the sugar cane. All that was avoided. Much better way of living. But the next child only lives 3 years, the next in 3 months, the next one's born dead, and I was a mistake. Mother had a long rest in between. She did have enough energy left to produce one. But I never got only 14 teeth above, never even a vestige of the other 2. Below I had the 16, but there wasn't room enough, and as a young fellow I had to have one of them taken out because it would just upset all the rest of them, come in at the wrong kind of an angle because there wasn't room enough for it. And my teeth don't come together. This one's out, it sticks out over the other one. So I'm a victim of civilized food. But I'm not the worst one. During the past 4 decades, the ratio of empty calorie foods to nutritionally superior foods in the average diet has increased so that today empty calorie foods represent 1/3 of the total calories consumed. Malnutrition is present in all age groups and at all economic and social levels. The most important factor in the maintenance of optimum health is the highest state of nutrition. The maintenance of the best possible state of nutrition depends upon good food. The inherent quality of the food depends upon the quality of the soil where it has grown. Creative medicine must be founded on growing the best foods. Thus alone can we create real health for our people, only through creating a sound and prosperous agriculture. and yet they say the soil has nothing to do with human health. Now, the Indian beggars is something new. In the scientific research in India, where every precaution was taken to get an accurate measurement of all food intake, it was found that only 6.25% of the adult beggars studied suffered any nutritional deficiency. Their total calorie intake was about half the recommended amount in this country. Only 2 out of 160 beggars studied, or 1.25%, had dental caries. Their protein came from small portions of wheat, maize, barley, and rice, with animal protein representing only 1.5% of the total protein intake. Yet 93% were free of nutritional deficiencies. Now, compare this 93% free of deficiencies with our well-fed American teenagers, where only 25% were free of nutritional deficiency, and with our adults, where it is difficult to find a group with over 23% free of physical weakness. Then compare 1.25% dental caries of the Indian beggars with our 90% dental caries among our school children, being 70 times more. Apparently, the calories of the Indian beggars were not as empty as ours. But whenever you give that, they say, yes, but they only live to be 32 years of age, and we live to be 68. We're far healthier than they are, so what if they do have not so many dental caries? They're sick in other ways. And so we go ahead. Despite their poverty, which was often extreme, the humblest Indians and mestizos often suffer less from malnutrition than the average middle-class family in the United States. The superior nutritive value of the foods and the unspoiled dietary habits and customs of the people are two important reasons for their superior status. A year later, the same group of technicians, as a preliminary to the establishment of the Mexican school lunch program, conducted a clinical study of 1,000 school children in one of the poorest districts of Mexico City. The families of the children averaged 7 persons, and they subsisted on a total family income of 64 cents a day. To the surprise of the investigator, these poverty-stricken Mexicans showed less evidence of malnutrition deficiencies than Michigan school children. In fact, their nutrition was definitely superior to that of the average person living in the Boston and New York areas of the United States. But again, you might say, yeah, but they only lived to be 35 and we lived to be 68. It's lifespan. Since we are writing about your life, you should know just what a longer or shorter lifespan means. Is the lifespan any barometer as to our adult health? Is a longer lifespan any indication as to better national health? Now, ladies and gentlemen, this is important. Because when you're talking to an intelligent person, that's what hits you right between the eyes. Well, you start to tell them anything about that we're not being healthy or anything of that order, they say, well, yes, but we're the healthiest we've ever been, and we're the healthiest of any nation because our lifespan is far superior. Newspapers, magazines, radio, and television never cease to give glowing reports of our progress towards better health. If that is true, why is there such a mad scramble for more and more vitamin pills? People must feel that something is wrong, that something is amiss or missing. All the propaganda and so-called proof is based upon the fact that the life expectancy figures of insurance companies show that your great-grandfather's life expectancy on the day he was born in 1850 was only 38 years, while your boy, born 100 years later in 1950, had a life expectancy on the day he was born of 68. Since the life expectancy has increased 30 years, almost double, it is simply taken for granted that as a nation we must be healthier collectively and individually than our granddads. So, I remember up in Massachusetts, 1923, a survey was taken of 5 cities up there. Haverhill, Lowell, Lawrence, New Bedford, and Fall River. They were all over 75,000 people. 50% of the homes had outside toilets. Now we take all those kids running around in that congested area with all the flies and disease germs around. Naturally, we killed off more of them from measles, mumps, smallpox, dysentery, and so forth when they were young. Now, today, that isn't true. Today, you can go into those towns and you see a home. What is the best room? I used to sell the cook pots down that country way back there, and the kitchens had an old stove over there that either burnt wood, oil, or coal, and the sink was nothing but a plain old sink with a sharp edge around it and sunk down into some wood. And the wood would get moist, and they had oilcloth over it, and it would all get moist and soggy in there, and all kinds of bacteria and germs and cockroaches and so forth. But today, what happens? When anybody buys a home today, even if it's a second-hand home, they spend more money in the bathroom and in the kitchen than any other rooms of the house. So it's all sanitary. There isn't very much money spent in the living room anymore. It's all in those two rooms. So with all the sanitary conditions, we don't have those contagious disease that kill them when they're young. We let them live now until they get to be 25, 40, 45, 50. And then we start killing them off by degenerative diseases. It gives us a larger lifespan, but it doesn't mean anything. Absolutely proves nothing about the adult, the health of the adult. Simply means that we've learned how to keep our babies and our children living longer. So they've been getting away with this for a long while, and it's time somebody was telling them the truth. This whole popular conception that as a nation we are healthier as adults today than 50 years ago is largely a myth. What it actually means is that science, the doctors, and better sanitary conditions have stopped the terrific mortality of babies and have almost wiped out the contagious and acute infectious diseases that took so many children under 15 years, thus allowing nearly 40% more of our people to live to maturity. This is what lengthened the life expectancy, but the longevity of those over 40 has profited little by medical experience. Let's face it, the greater longevity benefits from science have gone to the babies and the children under 15, for with all of our wonder drugs, antibiotics, synthetic vitamins, and synthetic hormones, in 100 years, little if anything has been done for those over 40. In Galileo's time, people believed the earth was flat, that the sun rotated around the sun. Galileo taught the reverse, that the earth was round, the earth rotated around the sun. He was called a faker and a nut. They imprisoned him in irons and threatened him with execution. Yet today, every schoolchild the world over knows he was right. Now, suppose that you had lived at the time of the Vikings. Anybody seen that picture around here, the Vikings? Anybody holding your hand up? Several of you seen it. All right, what did they believe in those days? That's only 1,000 years ago. Very, very short time ago. Well, they propelled themselves by their powerful sinew of rowing. And they were afraid to go out very far because they believed the earth was flat, and you come out here and all of it went over, the water left the earth just like water falling off of Niagara Falls. And that if they got out that far, they'd go over to perdition, to Valhalla, wherever they wanted to. Now the whole world believed that, the civilized world and the barbaric world. Now you have one lone guy comes along and says, that's all bunk. The world is round, you don't go out, go as far as you want to, you come right around the same place again. Well, he's crazy. He's got to go in the bug house. Tie him up. He shouldn't be in circulation. And so they did. And then they told him, unless he got down on his knees and begged the pardon of the big muckety-mucks that know it all, and they were going to kill him. So he got down on his knees and said, well, I guess I was mistaken. But as he got up, he whispered to a guy near to him, nevertheless, it's still round. Well, now then, in a few years, it was proven to be round. And now all the world is accepted around. If anybody came out and said the world's flat today, you'd think he was a nut, wouldn't you? Because you can prove that he was. Well, now that's the same way with our theory here. We're coming out with something that is not acceptable to the rank and file. They don't believe that food has got anything to do with their health. And when you say it has, they put you in jail for it. Well, anyhow, in 1628, when Dr. William Harvey was an Englishman came up with the theory that the blood actually circulated throughout the body, the medical profession ridiculed him and his idea, and the public called him a crack brain. He lost his practice and feared for his life. They actually stoned him. The poor, dumb public that he was trying to help stoned him when he came out of his own house. Well, that's what they're doing with you today. The MDs are coming around to our way of thinking. I don't know whether I told you, but in 1955, I was in Washington. And the American Medical Association had their annual meeting, and there were 100 booths there, and only one booth out of the 100 had anything to do with nutrition, and they avoided it like the plague. I think I was the only guy that went in it in about two hours that I was there. And on the rostrum for 5 days, they had lectures morning, noon, and night. Not a word was ever said about nutrition in 1955. 2 years later, exactly 2 years later, right here in this city, they had another meeting. 55,000 people attended. 4 subjects were discussed: cancer, heart trouble, ethics, and nutrition. 75% of the time was devoted to nutrition as a cause of disease. And the man that got the best award that the American Medical Association can give was Dr. Tom Spees. And Dr. Tom Spees is quoted over and over again in this article. And at this meeting, he got up there and gave the most revolutionary talk, and yet they gave him the biggest honor they're able to give. And what did he say? I couldn't have said it better myself. He said, top of page, right-hand column, page 11, all diseases are caused by chemicals, and all diseases can be cured by chemicals. All the chemicals used by the body, except for the oxygen which we breathe and the water which we drink, are taken in through food. Not drugs, not medicine, not chemistry, but through food. If we only knew enough, all diseases could be prevented and could be cured through proper nutrition. And that's your job, is to get the people to know enough. And what is enough? You've got to believe in natural foods. But before I go to that, read down the middle of the page, those underlines. He says, I expect to devote the rest of my years to trying to help older people. We don't want to just give them a longer life. We want to preserve the prime of life for a longer time. As tissues become damaged because they lack the chemicals of good nutrition, they tend to become old. They lack what I call tissue integrity. There are people of 40 whose brains and arteries are senile. If we can help this, the tissues repair themselves by correcting nutrition deficiencies, we can make old age wait. Now that's what he says, which is diametrically opposed to everything that the orthodox guys that are controlling the purse strings of the AMA stand for. Instead, we have become sold on the negative and unchristian idea that health-wise, we're only puppets in the hands of fate, subject to the whims of Lady Luck, with no control over our own health or physical or mental destiny. So convinced have we become that many today believe that food will do nothing for anybody's anything except satisfy hunger and fill the gullet. They forget that sound, wholesome nutrition is the basis of health and the greatest insurance against ill health. Then the question is what to do. And we tell them to eat natural foods. And over here, what are natural foods? They're foods grown on soils that have not been unbalanced in their mineral, humus, or bacterial contact by the wrong application and use of chemicals. There are foods grown on soils that have not been impregnated by poisonous insecticide sprays. There are foods not tampered with by man in order to stabilize them by killing the life of the food as represented by its enzymes. There are foods left in as near a natural state as is possible, still containing all the fresh live food factors, living enzymes, coenzymes, vitamins, vitamin complexes, organic minerals, proteins, carbohydrates, and fats, all unrefined, unpasteurized, unadulterated with chemicals, and wherever possible, eaten uncooked.